Icon Art Radio.
Hi, it's Bill Teeple, Alan Cobb, and Donna Colby, and this is Icon Art Radio. Okay, Donna, you've got a theme that is expansive. It's like includes the totality, time.
Yes, it's expansive or oppressive, depending on your way of looking at it, and it came up in a cafe conversation recently because for some reason my entire life, pretty much, I have felt time pressing on me, felt like there's never enough time. And the other day, in the morning, I was doing some exercises and had that thought, you know, why is there never enough time? Now I have more time, more free time than most people do in the day, and yet I never feel like there's enough time. So I asked myself, what is time? And the first thing that came to my mind was it's flow and change. So I thought, all right, then does that make sense? There's never enough flow and change. When I said that to myself, it sounded like, well, that's kind of absurd, until I realized that it wasn't absurd at all, that my dilemma regarding time had to do with not allowing time to be flow and change, but to think of it in terms of the chopped up measurement of time that we tend to call that time, where it's really just the clock and somebody's concept to make it convenient to have lunch with somebody or have a gathering of people. But time itself is just this flow and change. So that's what I've been working on lately, is trying to relate to time except for when I do have a lunch appointment, relate to time in that way. What's my time? How does it flow? How does it want to change? What's my pace? And how does that relate to my creative work? So that's the theme I'm throwing out for.
And I think one of the problems is that how does your flow of time fit with other people's flow of time, where there's these crossovers where you like make an appointment or something, mm-hmm. and then you don't make it because your flow won't allow it.
Yeah.
And there we're getting into the time world of the artist, because it seems to me that most of the very successful and great creative people that I have read about and seen and know as friends, go with their own time, because their creativity and their work flows at a certain rate, and they have to go with that rate, and they're proceeding towards something in their process, and this is why artists tend to never make their appointments, mm-hmm. and they're always late, and because they're following their own inner guide, and it doesn't always jive with how everybody else wants them to show up. But I always feel the pressure to meet other people's expectations that way, because I'm one of these people. The reason I'm able to do what I do is I'm on this fence between the world at large and their time frames and their needs and my need as a personal artist. And so that's where the pressure gets into my life, is putting all that together. In fact, my whole life seems to be a matter of putting all that together. But I see these artists, and I've always envied their ability to just say, no, I'm going with my flow.
Because you can say to people, sorry, I can't meet you at that time. I have an appointment. Even if the appointment is just with your creative time in your studio, that's the hard thing, because we tend to feel that that's selfish or flaky or something. But I think that's part of the delay. You know, you of course have to meet some. You don't want to be an hour late when you make an appointment for lunch with somebody. So you have to have some of that responsibility towards clock time. But I find myself tyrannizing myself with time. You know, like, I'm going to work on my novel for 2 hours this morning, and I'm going to paint this afternoon, and I'm going to meet somebody for dinner tonight, and blah, blah, blah. And it's all my creation, and yet if I feel like working on my novel all day and not painting in the afternoon, why does that make me feel like pressured or something, or like I'm lazy or not sticking to the schedule?
Have you not done tormenting me with your accursed time? One day, is that not enough for you? One day he went dumb, one day I went blind, the same day. They give birth astride the grave. The light gleams an instant, then it is night once more. On! In the words of the immortal Samuel Beckett, through his character, Hotso, in Waiting for Godot. Yeah, time, the ever-rolling stream. Time definitely controls us, but what is it that's actually controlling us? Your notion at one point is that it's flow. And yet, at the same time, you seem to be measuring your time in terms of productivity. I'm going to write and produce some writing, and then I'm going to produce some art, and then I'm going to, you know, fulfill obligations. And somehow that becomes time. And yet, there isn't any time. You know, the metaphor that I like best is what I call the mayo sandwich, where one slice of bread is the past.
It was referred to
actually,
before.
Have I done this on the air before?
I probably, but let's try it again.
I don't think you did on the air yet.
one slice of bread is the past, and one slice of bread is the future. And the mayonnaise is what's in between.
Only mayonnaise?
It's all mayo, yes. It's all mayo, it's only mayo. And the problem is that the past, really, if you look at it closely, is completely ridiculous. I mean, most of our memories are memories of remembering things that we have remembered before. And when we remember them now, we have no idea whether we're actually remembering the event or 6,000 parallel memories of the event. And the future is just a kind of bogus projection of expectations and things. And apart from predictions like the sun will rise tomorrow, we haven't any idea what the future will bring. And so we've got these two slices of complete and utter imaginary nonsense, and in between them is the present. And that's where the flow is, and yet that's where there is no flowing. It's just flow. It's the purity. It's a transcendental thing, because it's not the ticking of the clock. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the limit of no past and no future. So it's interesting. I mean, I feel terrible pressure if I say I'm going to be somewhere at 3. I start thinking about it at lunch. Oh dear, I've got something at 3, which makes, you know, life a lot more difficult than it needs to be.
The Greeks have two terms for time, chronos and kairos, and chronos being the clock time, the measurable increments of time, and kairos being what you were just talking about, that field of undifferentiated timelessness. And according to them, you can choose which one you live in, and you can live in both of them at different, you know, depending on what you need. So if you need to keep the 3 o'clock appointment, you just decide, all right, I have to shift over to chronos time at 3 o'clock. But in the ideal world, you could still, up until 3 o'clock, be living in kairos time. Mm-hmm. Whereas what you're saying is you start in the morning living in chronos time because that 3 o'clock appointment is hanging over your head, putting a limit on your...
Yeah, and it really comes down to this delusion that I have that somehow the outcome is under my control and that I am responsible for 3 o'clock. Now, obviously, on some kind of superficial level, you know, we are responsible to meet our friends for lunch if we said we were going to, and we don't want them to wait for us. But on another level, that, you know, that's really an expression of our desire or our intent. But the actual behavior, I question whether we need to participate in it as much as we think we do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my problem isn't that the 3 o'clock appointment is hanging over me as much as it is that I have somehow constructed this strange, you know, model in my head that requires me to be vigilant. Otherwise, the 3 o'clock thing will fall apart and the world will come to an end.
In other words, you feel like you may get lost in your own process of living and forget about the 3 o'clock appointment?
Maybe it's a fear of flying. Maybe I'm afraid to live in the you know, mythical time, and so I'm clinging to historical time. Although I don't think I'm doing it out of desire, but I might be doing it out of some unknown fear. I don't know. It's a very subtle question.
Well, I think we have this appointment, this thing, and it sits there on our head all day long. And what we'd like is to be able to remove that so that we can be free in the moment and not have that, you know, engaging and taking energy.
But
that's our doing.
Yeah.
That's a pressure we create on ourselves. And I've found that I've created all kinds of pressures in this way. And I'm practicing. It's been different because I used to have more freedom. I was more like a free artist. And now, since I've been teaching and running ICON here in town in the last 8 years, I have scheduled appointments that are very important. If I don't show up to teach 11 times a week, you know, there's serious repercussions. But so I've learned to enjoy the freedom of a structured life. And so once I'm in the rhythm of it, that feels good. But there's another thing where I I have this thing sit on my head, like you're talking about something that is really rather arbitrary. And I'm learning that if I really need to do something else, I can pick up the phone and change that appointment.
Yeah.
And just erase it and take it off my head and do what needs to be done. While in the past, I would have tended to let it hang over me, shadow everything I'm doing, not even be able to think, you know, holistically about what's at hand because this thing's sitting on my head, and then make sure I got there only to find out that the other people either didn't care or they didn't get there themselves, or that, and it was just plain not that important, only I gave it this importance that was unnecessary. So I've actually learned how to prioritize in my own mind what needs to be done at any particular moment and not be afraid to pick up the phone and change the appointment. Or, well, I have to say that, and I'll apologize publicly to all of my friends and everyone in the world who I'm not calling or showing up to see, because I have actually nature has decided and I've decided together that there's only so much time and only so many things that can be done in that time, and so I have to devote to this thing that I've taken on, like ICON, and so my whole world is pretty well wrapped up in the time, the space-time activities associated with that, to the point that my friends have had to understand that I have no social life anymore. I don't go see people or go do things. I don't even go out at night and do other artistic things I'd like to see because I have a fairly structured life. But on the other hand, if I take those pressures off, that structured life feels really easy and in the flow, even though I'm hitting all these targets. It's really interesting stuff.
That's very nice. That's a nice one. Because it's not an either-or situation,
no,
you know.
That's
very nice.
I think the biggest mistake we make is in not having faith that it's working itself out without our having to make it happen. We act like if I don't, you know, prioritize my 3 o'clock meeting, I won't remember it, or I won't get to it, or I might not remember it, when perhaps if I were really free, I would just go to the 3 o'clock meeting at 3 o'clock, and I might not even think about why. And, you know, you'd turn up at your classes and people would find you there, and sometimes you wouldn't, and they'd learn something interesting in your absence.
I'm not there yet.
No, but I think in a way that's sort of the definition of real life. Uh-huh. Animals are all doing it. The plants and animals are absolutely oblivious to this whole thing that we're talking about. And somehow they manage to get through the day and have enough to eat and, you know, do their thing as they're designed to do.
But this is what I've been aspiring to, this thing that you're talking about. It's very interesting because it has to do with having faith that you've, and this goes back to everything we've been talking about making art. Mm-hmm. You develop a vehicle that's capable of speaking the language of art, whether it's whatever vehicle, and then you develop to such a fine degree that you can just surrender and step back and allow the perfect time sequence, the perfect motion of the hand, the perfect intellectual decisions to take place while you watch, and everything. Then you have some kind of holistic, total kind of event occurring. And this has been my aspiration, not only in painting. I understood it intellectually in the context of making a work of art, but I've been trying to practice in the last decade being able to show up and have that happen. Mm-hmm. So all you have to do is show up to these things you've set up. Mm-hmm. Because if you struggle and try and rehearse and practice so you'll do the right thing, it'll be fragmented and you'll forget, and it just won't. I mean, I know very well what happens when you try to do things that way. Yeah. It's not holistic. There's nothing total about it. But I've been experiencing in recent years this thing of showing up, having faith that everything that I've done for 60 years in my life has added up to some kind of like a practiced, refined vehicle to be in this moment now and see what happens. And magic starts happening if you do that.
Yeah, and it does take trust in life itself and in your own inherent knowledge and all that. I've actually started giving myself a vehicle to practice that way of living by picking out certain days, at least one day a week, that I call a spacious day, where I don't write down anything that I have to do that day, even my own projects at home or anything. And how I work it is, I'll just, even if no impulse comes to do a certain thing, I will just like walk around, just walk around the house or go for a walk down the street until a specific impulse comes to do some particular thing. And I've had several of those days now in the last few weeks, and they are extraordinarily productive days. Mm-hmm. But they're productive often of this magic that you're talking about. That's the flavor I get at the end of the day, was this day was really magical. Mm-hmm. And often I've gotten a lot of very concrete things done on those days, but they didn't feel like work because it was just this natural.
Maybe I should try the opposite and set aside one day a week that I actually write down what I'm going to do and do it, because I'm kind of in free floating time these last several years, and I have no idea what I'm going to do, and I prefer to have some idea. It's fun. I look forward to tomorrow, more easily if I think I'm going to be doing something interesting. But very often I go to bed having been thinking about one thing, and I wake up in the morning not thinking about anything, and I haven't any idea why I'm getting up or what I'm supposed to do or what, why I'm here in a sense, until I get going. And I, in a sense, I do a similar thing to you. If nothing comes up by the time I've, gotten ready for action, I'll just sit down and look out the window and be silent. And within a very short time, I'll suddenly remember, so to speak, a whole bunch of things that needed to be done or I was looking forward to doing.
But it seems like nature's delivering you a package that's appropriate to the moment. This is reminding me of Agnes Martin describing how she works, which is she just waits for the inspiration to come. And it's I don't think you would describe where it's headed in terms of that you're just going around in circles. Doesn't it feel like it's progressing in this way? There's a kind of, however we want to call it, progress. But
yeah, there is a, it's a, funny because when
thread,
you said...
A thread of moving towards something greater.
Definitely. I mean, since I've learned this idea, which I'll probably unlearn sometime in the next few months, but currently I'm excited about having learned that each work that I do is preparation for something that I'm going to do after it. So nothing that I do is an end in its own right. It's all just preparation for the next thing. And so there's a direction, or there's sort of history implied in that because it's evolutionary. There's something, about these stepping stones that defines a path, but I don't know, what direction it's going in, because there's no compass in that area. But at the same time, it's kind of not a direction in the sense that it doesn't really have a meaningful history. It's not helpful for me to think about why I did that thing day before yesterday, which prepared me for the thing that I did yesterday, which puts me in just the right place to do what I'm doing today. Instead, I just find that I am in constant admiration of how well organized it was, and whoever organized it is beyond my experience. I'm not doing it. And I'm not talking about witnessing, really, or something like that. It's just a sort of a mode of activity that the less I try to organize my life, the better organized it seems to become.
Which completely is it opposite of the way I was brought up.
Oh,
I think a lot of my problem is that my family was extraordinarily punctual, and what was valued was ticking things off the list, having concrete goals and then checking them off the list.
Yeah.
Then you had a great day. And it's very hard for me. That's why I'm having these scheduling these spacious days where I don't make a list, because as soon as I write something down on the list,
you're obligated.
If I don't do it, if I do it and cross it off the list, there's this tremendous satisfaction or feeling like I'm going to get approval from somebody. Mm-hmm. And if I don't cross it off the list, it's like, I feel like I've failed somehow, even though they're in that category, most of them, of things that don't really have to be done that day.
Yeah.
They're just my things. Yeah. So it's hard to get rid of that kind of tyranny of one's upbringing.
Yeah.
And
do you find that you're accumulating things that don't get off the list, or are you able to keep up with the list?
Oh no, I have an enormous backlog of
undone what worries
things,
me. How
it's
do you
enormous.
Feel when you
but
when
I,
you
I've,
look
I've
at the enormity of it?
Yeah, I mean, I've accustomed myself of this trail of things that, because a creative person, their mind can create thousands of things in an hour.
Right.
And so I wait for nature to indicate through opportunity and things in front of my face that says now, oh yeah, okay, I'm ready. I got that thing. I've already, I've got the thing ready to go. And I go with it. I've learned, because I've got the similar problem. I've learned to see there's a thread of some higher intelligence involved in picking up on what I'm ready to do and creating the situation for it to happen, and that leads to this and this, and I feel like I'm just hitting the high points, but those are the points that needed attending to, and the rest is sort of like in the ocean of possibilities and ready to come up when the cue is there.
Yeah, I think that's totally true, and let some of them fade away. The desire to even do those things, it just fades away. And sometimes it was all you really needed was the knowledge, or that spark was sufficient in itself, and you don't really have to do that thing, but because I wrote it on the list. So, I'm actually working well with this transition, but it's a tricky one.
Well, I remember I worked with a couple of time management specialists a long time ago in New York, writing a summary of all of their principles for McGraw-Hill. And the one thing that they pretty much all had in common was that if you make a to-do list, everything below item 5, and some of them everything below item 3, you can forget about it. You might as well not put it on the list. And so each day you've in effect thrown out, 10 or 15 items, and a few of the ones you threw out make it onto the next list. But if they consistently appear below number 3, after a week or so, they'll stop appearing.
You know what's the problem with that kind of thing, though, is that you tend to put the things that you have to do, like for other people and everything,
absolutely,
on 1, 2, and 3. And so some of the things that you deeply want to do in your heart of hearts are down number 10, and you don't let yourself.
Yeah, but that's your job to get that to number
one. Right?
And this is
a
critical problem in business, because the projects that are ongoing end up getting the lowest priority, because everything that's immediate has to be done immediately.
Yeah.
And then the things that take months to do, I can't do them now. I have to call this guy before 2 days have gone by, and I have to close this deal or finish this contract or, fire this person or hire that person. And those things are always going to be higher on the list. Mm-hmm. So operating from a list, in a way, is almost guaranteeing that the things that are persistent and aren't on the front burner are going to be skipped.
I recently heard a tape of Alan Watts, who said he never answered his mail, because if he just waits, it all gets taken care of.
Yeah, right. Sooner or later, the police will come and remind him that
sooner or later, your friends don't pay attention to you anymore.
He probably had a few lackeys.
You have to pay the rent.
Don't worry about that stuff.
So it's a balancing. It's a balancing, a juggling, a dancing, it's not like a formula.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.